Hi everyone, I'm Helen Cracknell, a solicitor in the pensions team here at Burgess Salmon. Welcome to episode 5 of season 2 of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. In this episode, we'll be discussing personal pensions, including the carry judgment and key takeaways for SIP operators.
Hi everyone, I'm Chris Brown in Burgess Salmon's pensions team, and in today's episode, we are joined by Anna Davis, a director in our funds and financial regulation practice. Thanks for joining us, Anna.
Thank you, it's my pleasure.
So Anna, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a bit about yourself, please, and your work in the pension sector.
Of course. So like you said, I'm a director in our financial regulatory practice at Burgess Salmon. I joined Burgess Salmon from an in-house role at AXA Wealth, and I was a compliance manager there for many years before I retrained as a lawyer. So my background's really in the regulation of insurance and wealth management, and personal pensions and SIPs have been a key focus area for me since about 2006-2007.
So Anna, on that timeline, obviously SIPs have had a very interesting journey since they were first FCA regulated in 2007. Could you remind us briefly what happened?
Of course. So as you say, operating a personal pension scheme, including a SIP, came within the regulatory perimeter in April 2007. And then we had the first publication from the FSA around how it thought SIP operators were performing in that sense in 2009. And at that time, they reported that as a whole, they didn't see that SIP operators posed a significant risk to their statutory objectives. So all good for the first couple of years. But by 2011, the FSA's view of the sector was changing, and it noted in its retail conduct risk outlook that year that it had concerns about poor firm conduct and the potential for significant consumer detriment. So they did a thematic review, which they published the results of in 2012, which unfortunately confirmed its concerns. Generally, it found poor firm compliance with regulatory requirements. There were CAS issues, that is issues with safeguarding of client money and assets within SIP. They found firms being used as a conduit for financial crime. They found that firms had insufficient capital. They found evidence of conflicts of interest. But importantly, they found a lack of adequate due diligence being undertaken for introducers and non-standard investments within the SIP. And they also found a relatively widespread misunderstanding among SIP operators that they bear little or no responsibility for the quality of the SIP business that they were administering. And that a lot of SIP operators saw that as the responsibility of clients and clients' advisors, or at least that's what the FCA thought at the time. So they uncovered widespread concerns, I suppose, across a number of regulatory areas, but this issue around non-standard assets, due diligence and SIP operator duties in that area was starting to come through at this time.
That's, that's speaking as a pensions lawyer, that's really interesting background. And I know we're going to lead on to 2013-2014 and leading up to the carry judgments. What happened next then? Was there, so you talked about a thematic review. Did other materials come out, you know, sort of, I don't know, guessing a good practice and things like that, looking at good practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So FSA was replaced by the FCA in 2012-2013. And in 2013, the FCA published this guide for SIP operators, which focused on all the regulatory requirements that applied to SIP operators, client money, client assets, that kind of stuff. And it was really a different tone from what had come out from the FSA. They were clearly trying to take a different tack, but still probably having the same level of concern. So they were publishing good practice, statements of what SIP operators should be doing, and trying to encourage firms, I guess, that way to improve their standards. But in 2014, FCA then followed up with a Dear CEO letter to SIP operators. They'd done a further thematic review following the 2013 guidance, focusing on due diligence and on non-standard assets. But they were finding widespread failings continuing at that time. So they started to take a tougher tone at that point again.
And then how did this progress? It all sounds like it's reaching a bubbling point at this time.
Indeed. But that was really it after 2014. Until the FCA published a portfolio letter in 2020 for SIP operators. But that's something that they published for all subsectors. So there's nothing unusual in there. But interestingly, what interjected, I suspect, here in the bubbling point, as you say, Helen, is that between 2014 and 2022, there were these two key cases, Barclay Burke and Carey, that were travelling through the Pensions Ombudsman, the FOS and the courts. And so there was a period here of real ongoing uncertainty and a lot of debate in the industry as to what SIP operators' duties really were, particularly focusing on this non-standard asset and due diligence area.
Yeah, and that takes us nicely up to Carey then. So, Anna, you'll take us through it in a minute, but the Supreme Court has recently denied Carey, now Options UK Personal Pensions, I think, the right to appeal in April this year. So it's the Court of Appeal, isn't it? So the Court of Appeal's judgment in Carey is now settled law?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about what SIP operators can take from the judgments and what you think might happen in the space next. But can we start with a brief reminder of what Carey's all about?
Of course. So the case centred around Mr. Adams's transfer of his existing Friends Life personal pension into a Carey SIP. He transferred about £56,000, and almost all of that transfer value was used to purchase storage pod leases from Store First. And Mr. Adams was introduced to Store First and to the Carey SIP by a Spanish-based unregulated introducer called CLP Brokers. So unlike some of the other cases, the Store First investment wasn't a scam, but it did very poorly, pretty illiquid. And he was very concentrated because he put all his investment into that investment, and it did really poorly. And essentially he lost most, if not all, of the value of that transfer value of his pension.
But it wasn't a scam, as you say. So what were Mr. Adams's claims?
Well, in the High Court, he pleaded three causes of action. There was a tort claim, which relates to, because of Carey's relationship with CLP, the argument was that Carey was essentially liable for any negligent advice that was provided by CLP. But we don't need to worry too much about the tort claim.
Right.
The more interesting of the claims are the Cobbs claim, I'm calling it. So this was the Conduct of Business Rules.
Yeah.
So this is the FSAs and FCA's Conduct of Business Rules,
yep.
In particular, what's known as the client's best interest rule. So this claim was that Carey had breached its duty under that rule, and that rule says that you should act honestly, fairly and professionally in accordance with the best interests of your client. So that was the second claim. And the third claim, we're calling it the Section 27 claim. So this is Section 27 of the Financial Services Markets Act, and this runs that due to the acts of CLP, the agreement for the SIP should be unenforceable as a result of Section 27.
Anna, what did the courts decide in relation to all of these claims?
Well, the High Court found wholly in favour of the SIP provider, Carey. The most important part of the High Court judgment for present and ongoing purposes is that relation to the Cobbs claim. So here the judgment was that Carey wasn't responsible for Mr. Adams's investment decisions. And this was because the T's and C's between Carey and Mr. Adams were really clear that the SIP was operated on an execution-only basis. That is, that Mr. Adams made his own investment decisions and Carey would just accept those without needing to make any assessment as to whether they were the right decisions or not. So the court found, yep, that was really, really clear that was the basis on which you were acting. But also that regulatory obligation that we talked about in Cobbs, the client's best interest rule, didn't introduce a different or wider obligation. So the judgment was that duty didn't put an obligation on Carey to assess the suitability or appropriateness of Mr. Adams' investment decision. It was just purely up to him. So what this really showed us is that agreement between the SIP operator and the member is really important, but the regulation doesn't come in and take precedence over it. That's the legal position, at least.
At the High Court. And then what about the Court of Appeal?
So Mr. Adams appealed to the High Court. His appeal on the Cobbs claim wasn't successful, so that High Court judgment remains good law on that point.
Yeah.
But his appeal under Section 27 claim was successful. So to flesh this out a bit more from what we talked about earlier, that claim turned on whether CLP, the broker, was in breach of the general prohibition in the Financial Services Markets Act. So that prohibition says you may not carry out a regulated activity in the UK unless you're authorised or exempt. So Section 27 applies where an authorised person, so that would be Carey here, makes an agreement in the course of carrying on a regulated activity here, operating a SIP, but the agreement was made in consequence of a third party's breach, so CLP's breach of the general prohibition. So it all turned on, was CLP in breach of the general prohibition? Were they carrying out a regulated activity in the UK for which they were not authorised? And the Court of Appeal decided that yes, they were carrying on regulated activities in the UK. They should have been authorised, they weren't. And the consequences of that were that the agreement between Carey and Mr. Adams was unenforceable, and Mr. Adams was then entitled to recover the transfer value paid into the SIP along with compensation. So essentially, Carey became on the hook for the CLP introduction because they shouldn't really have accepted it because they weren't authorised.
So Carey's essentially on the hook for CLP not being FCA authorised. But I suppose what are key takeaways for SIP operators, Anna?
Two things I would say. Firstly, that it's really important that your agreement with your customer is clear about the basis on which you're acting. So if you're an execution only service provider, that needs to be really, really clear that your SIP member is taking responsibility for their own investment decisions. And that needs to be clear right the way through the piece. Not enough for it to be clear in the terms and conditions. You want to be clear through all your comms. So that's the basis on which you're acting. And secondly, I would say don't accept business from an unregulated third party unless you're really sure that they don't need to be authorised for the activities that they're carrying out. Because if you get that wrong, you stand to be on the hook for any problems later down the line. And actually, those points probably apply equally to all financial services firms, not just SIP operators.
What do you think will come of this in the future?
Well, as a regulatory lawyer, what I find quite interesting about all this and having sort of lived through all of it, if you like, is that following that, those 5 years of really key concerns and focus from the FSA and the FCA, you'd normally start to see firms being put into enforcement, action being taken. What normally happens is lots comes out and then the regulator feels like they've told the industry enough times, enough is enough, and then they start putting firms into enforcement. But that didn't really happen here. And I can only assume that that sort of pause from the regulator, if I can call it that, was because they were waiting to see what would happen from the Barclay Burke and the Carey cases that straddled that period. And the judgments probably took a lot longer to come out than anyone thought they were going to in 2014. And during that time, of course, lots of SIP operators that might have been the ones that got put in enforcement, because of course not all SIP operators by any means will have had these problems and these concerns. Those ones that would have gone into enforcement may well have gone into administration by now, sold their books, closed their doors. So the time for FCA to kick a load of firms into enforcement is probably passed by now.
So do you think that means that the FCA will turn their attention back to SIP operators, or do you think things will remain quiet on that front for now?
I think they probably will retrain their focus to SIP operators at some point. And I wonder whether the new consumer duty that they're consulting on at the moment might just give them that platform to look at it again.
And Anna, can you tell us about the new consumer duty, please?
Of course. So it's a set of new outcome-focused rules and guidance. And the idea is that they will result in a higher level of consumer protection in retail financial services. So across the retail board, not just SIP operators. In a nutshell, it's made up of three elements. There's a consumer principle, which is an overall standard of behaviour that the FCA wants to see from firms. And it's probably going to read along the lines of a firm must act to deliver good outcomes for retail clients. Mm-hmm. So that's quite similar to the customer's best interest duty that we talked about in relation to Carey and the Cobbs claim, but it's more outcome focused. Mm-hmm. Then there, underneath that, there'll be some cross-cutting rules. And that's the FCA's overarching expectations that will apply across all areas of the firm relationship. So the requirements are probably going to be that you must act in good faith towards your retail customers. You must avoid foreseeable harm to those retail customers, and you must enable and support those retail customers to pursue their financial objectives. And then underpinning all of that are four outcomes, which are the more detailed expectations, which apply against the key elements of the firm consumer relationship. So product and services and their design, consumer understanding, communications, price and value, and customer support, customer service. So on its face, that all looks quite similar to the current regime, but I think there's probably a lot in the detail there that's going to require a lot of change and a period of implementation for firms. For some firms, it'd probably be a continuation of what they've been doing for a long time, but for others, it will be quite a lot of change and a lot of work.
Do you think that the FCA will look to follow the Carey judgment closely when applying the new duty?
That's an interesting question. So as we said earlier, the High Court judgment was that your contract is key and the regulation doesn't take precedence over that. So you don't, if you say that you're not going to look at suitability or appropriateness of your SIP members' investment decisions, then you don't have to do that. So that's the legal authority, that's the legal position. But I wonder if there still is a question mark about whether the FCA will expect a higher standard there, particularly in the context of that new consumer duty, and whether they might expect firms to be challenging customers more or taking decisions about whether to accept these sort of esoteric investments on the basis that that might not result in a positive customer outcome and therefore isn't in line with the new consumer duty. But only time will tell. I suspect if you're a SIP operator with a low tolerance for regulatory risk, you might want to do more than just that legal duty. But you know, the important thing is that you've got a baseline, really clear agreement with your customer about what you are going to do and what they as the consumer are responsible for, and you go from there.
Oh, thanks, Anna. That's really interesting. And I think a really interesting run through Carey with some really interesting takeaways for SIP operators there as well. So just to wrap up this podcast, are there any other hot topics or hot issues, hot spots for SIP operators to be mindful of?
So I think preparing for the new consumer duty is going to be more than enough for the sector to be getting on with for now.
Right.
Those four outcomes are pretty all encompassing. But I think there are probably some key areas of focus just not to take your eye off or think about afresh, perhaps, when you're looking at the consumer duty and how you're going to implement it. Mm-hmm. I think the issue and concerns around non-standard assets is going to continue to be a really hot topic for the regulator. And I think that will be important in a platform context as well. So a lot of our SIP operator clients are actually platform providers as well, and they've got their SIPs on the platform. And I think the issues around non-standard assets could have a read over personally to investment platforms, even where you're not holding those assets within a SIP. Scams, of course, are bound to continue unabated. That seems to be the way of things, unfortunately. I think conflicts of interest are going to stay on the FCA's agenda, as well as capital adequacy, sort of technical points around that. And probably international SIPs as well, especially those that are investing through offshore bonds and the value for money around those structures, which again is going to link in with the consumer duty. So I think these are all things to be perhaps just be mindful of and looking at afresh when you're thinking about complying with the consumer duty.
Thanks, Anna. That's really interesting. So I think there's lots then for SIP operators to be thinking about at the moment, whether that's coming out of Carey or the new consumer duty and focusing on those particular areas as well. So lots for SIP operators to be thinking about.
Thanks, Anna.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. If you would like to know more about our pensions or financial regulations teams and how our experts can work with you, then you can contact me, Helen, Anna, or any of our teams via our website. This episode is the fifth of our second season of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. All of our episodes are available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So thanks, Anna, for joining us today. And to our listeners, don't forget to subscribe. And thanks for listening.